Okay, so we're here to talk about pivots and panoramas. I'm Amy Alberts. I'm a user researcher on Windows Phone 7. Chad, do you want to introduce yourself?
I'm Chad. I'm a UX design lead for Windows Phone.
So,
can I just get a show of hands of who's designers and who's developers and or diviners or just to kind of get a landscape? Who sees themselves as like a real hardcore designer? How about developers? How about both? Okay, I just wanted to get a landscape of who we're actually talking to. So
that's good, yeah. Point.
Appreciate that.
Great. Okay, so what we wanted to do is dive a little bit deeper into pivots and panoramas because they are kind of some of the more common things that are on Windows Phone 7. Compare and contrast them and talk through some of the nuances of them because they're probably things that you may be considering as part of the applications that you're building. So one thing to first talk about is how they're similar. So the way that we think of pivots and panoramas is that there are some of the best controls to use to build the top part of the kind of the top layer of an application. They do a really good job of presenting a lot of data to the user, segmenting data, et cetera, and that's what their job is basically break up data, different types of data, into consumable chunks. For the user to navigate through, to consume, and then potentially act on to do more stuff. They're also physically similar if you think about how the user interacts with pivots and panos. They both have a left to right gesture that's associated with them. They're cyclical in nature, so they go all the way around. And then they also interact the same way with the back stack. So they have the same interaction with the back stack. The user has the same expectations with them when it comes to the back stack model. And so they're very similar in that way, just in terms of the system mental model that the user has. And then finally, they're very graphically similar. You know, just at the very base level, they're just a list of, you know, stuff, you know, and chunks of stuff for the user to look at. They also have a bit of off-screen content, which is something that we had to manage the usability of. So when you look at pivots specifically and try to define them, what they are essentially is an application view manager. So your application has a bunch of data in it, and a pivot is going to manage those views that you may want to present to the user. The views can be data filters, they can be app views, related content, et cetera, right? So there's all various ways that you can slice and dice the data that you have. Pivots do a wonderful job of slicing that for you, and they also give the user the indicator at the top with the pivot headers, which you see right here, all in red urgent, what it is, how it is that you are slicing and dicing that data, which can be very good for them. So another thing to note, which is a big differentiator between a pivot and a panorama, is that the content is optimized to the screen size. So you're confined into that screen size, and so that everything is fitting very nicely into that area that the user is looking at. Generally speaking, we try to limit the views, so the number of pivots, to 7. And that's just basically kind of a cognitive thing for users. They can really only manage to kind of remember and know that there are about 7 different slices of data, right? And so if you have a lot more, then you might want to kind of rethink how many slices you're putting on your data. So this is an example of one of the pivots that we have. This is basically just having a different view of the same data. So this is in the calendar application. You go from either looking at the day view, which is a very calendar-like view of data, to either the agenda view. There's very similar behaviors between these two pivots. They both scroll up and down, et cetera, and move left to right. The next example is actually showing very different types of data, so now you're no longer filtering or changing the using this views as a filter, but instead you're showing different and related content. Okay, so this is where you have kind of fundamentally different types of data being shown on the two, but they're related at the sense that they are the calendar appointment that the user's looking at.
Okay? And we're just highlighting that they're both appropriate uses of the pivot control,
yep.
Just that there's not one way to use it.
Right. So the next thing is panoramas. So the panorama, instead of being very confined to the space that the user is looking at, instead this is like a horizontal canvas. So the sense that the user gets is this this place, the panorama, is bigger than the screen that they're looking at. So it's this canvas in which the user can move around. And you also have layered animations and UI controls. So the animation can behave differently depending on what layer the UI is in. There's different controls that are happening on the page. You typically have just kind of conformed controls inside a pivot, while here in the panorama you can have a lot of different controls, a lot of different presentations of data. You can go from lists to grids to buttons, etc. And what this tends to be is the top layer to several different types of experiences. So one part of the panorama may take you to a list. Another part of the panorama may take you to a grid, etc. So the intent behind this is that it's actually an aggregator of different experiences, while the pivot is not really about that. It's more so the very kind of habitual behavior. Because the panorama, what we see when we've tested these panoramas with users is that they're very interesting and exciting places for the users to be because they're graphically, visually beautiful for them, but it's also a lot to take in. And so what we've tried to do is limit the amount of views that we present inside the panorama. So our general recommendation is to only have about 4 sections in a panorama so that the user doesn't get too overwhelmed by all the stuff that's going on. So it's really kind of better for fewer amounts of things that are highly directed kind of tasks. So this is a great example of a panorama, both in not only its behavior, but its content. So one of the things that this does is, one, you have this background image that spans the whole part of the panorama, and then you have the different sections that overlay on top of it. The titles are going to move at a different rate depending on what title it is. So the panorama title, being games, is going to move as the user moves through the panorama at a different rate than those titles. Another thing to note in the way that we like to think about the best practices with panoramas is that these things that you're bubbling up to the user are ways of looking at your collection of stuff that you're trying to present as being difficult or impossible for the user to do without the panorama. So a good example of this is right here, where you have the requests being bubbled up. So yes, the user could go in and kind of hunt and peck through all their games to find out who's nudging them or who wants to play or who's online. But this is a way for us to say, okay, we have a bird's eye view of all the games that you have, and we're going to bubble up some information that you particularly may find interesting or want. So it's this holistic kind of the sum is equal to more than its parts. So that's the best case scenario for these panoramas and something that resonates really strongly with users. So really breaking it down then, comparison, contrasting between the pivot and the panorama. Pivots then are about really kind of efficient, focused, habitual kind of behavior, right? Like, I need to get something done, you know? So it's like email, right? Calendar, etc. And so what you want to do is allow the user to become very familiar, very used to the data that you're presenting and be able to use it in a very kind of habitual way. The panorama isn't about that. It's not about, you know, doing the same thing over and over again. Instead, what you want to do is create, in a very literal sense, a very expansive place, right? It goes beyond the borders of the screen. And so what it's doing is it's inviting exploration. And so by nature of inviting exploration, you have also dynamic content. The user shouldn't just know by nature of going into the panorama what it is that they're going to see. They may have a sense of what the data is, may have a sense of what might be there, but the content should be constantly refreshing, et cetera, and be this dynamic place. So then the question is, to pano or not to pano, right? Because there's been a lot of talk about, you know, how much of these are we going to see, and what we wanted to do is really give you guys a sense of, like, if you're thinking about a panorama, how do you think about it critically to really know if this is the right thing for you? And so one of the big things is, do you need an application bar? So do you need a, you know, do you have a bunch of tasks that are associated with your content and with your application, do you need to have those icons at the bottom that the user needs to interact with? And if so, you probably shouldn't use a panorama, because we'll show you an example of what happens if you were to do that. Do you have the desire for a full bleed image? So one of the really good things about our panoramas is that full bleed image and that really beautiful artwork that comes through, and the parallax behavior that happens behind over it. Another thing to think about is how many different content types, views, how many both content types, different views do you have in your application, and then how many views total do you have for it. What we wouldn't want to see is a panorama that takes the user to a pivot control, and just every single section of the panorama takes the user to a different pivot. You know, like, that would not be really an ideal experience for them. It kind of breaks that whole idea of that expansive exploration, and at the same time, it's kind of a misuse of the control. And so this is our example of what would have happened had we put email in a pano. Okay, so there's a lot of things that kind of break down when you think about why someone even uses email, and then what happens when it goes into a pano. So one of the first things is that we use as much of the screen real estate as possible when it comes to email, because it's about tasks, it's about getting something done, reading, etc. If you put it in a pano, what you've done is now eaten into critical information and critical stuff that the user needs. Okay. Another thing that happens is the nature of the pivots that we're using is actually good information for the user to have. When they're looking at the all pivot, it's good for them to know that there's to the right, there's an unread. In this case, they would never know that. And instead, you're just, again, eating into their content area. And now the question is, what happens if I want to refresh? What if I want to reply? The only way to do that is to create a context menu against all of these. So it basically creates a really kind of dumb pano that we wouldn't want to do. So this is hopefully kind of illustrates why certain applications are really good for pivots, while others probably wouldn't work as a pano. So if you do indeed decide to build a panorama, there's certain guidelines that would be good to think about in terms of the design. So the most important thing is to entice the user. These panoramas are intended to kind of get the user to explore. There's basic kind of human behavior that you can capitalize on here, which is there's nothing more interesting to a person as stuff about them, right? So the more stuff that you can surface about who they are, what they're doing, about the other people in their lives, et cetera, and what those other people in their lives think about them, et cetera, the more you can do about that, the more you will entice them to explore and want to be inside your panorama. And then also the physically interesting behaviors that inherent within the panorama will also get them to explore. One thing that's always critically important with those designs is to make sure that the user never loses their place inside that panorama and always knows when the left right is there. But that's a kind of a part of those inherent designs. And the whole idea behind this is to deliver a curated user experience. This thing should feel like something that's not really generic, that's something that everybody gets, but that's for that particular user. And so what you want to do is have a small, very carefully selected set of tasks that you're optimizing for, as opposed to everything that your app can do. Like I was saying before, that fresh, dynamic, compelling content, so that most of the time when the user goes into the panorama, they're seeing something new. And that with that, you're at a balance of consistency and surprise, that there's a structure within that panorama that the user understands, and you get that through the use of those headings in the views, but that the content within there is something that actually is interesting to them and changes over time. So one thing that we didn't have to think about is, like, how do you play nice, right? How do you use the panoramas and the pivots together? And generally the way that we think about it is, when you're in a panorama, the user's in a panorama, they're in an exploratory mode, right? This is like the fiddle factor that we call for phones, where people are just kind of messing about. Once they drill, they have transitioned from that fiddle moment into a focused task. The best use, or the best thing you can do for the user at that point, is to use simpler user interface to support the task that they've transitioned into. And so a good example of that is our music and video hub, where here again you have an expansive place where you reuse the the album art as the background image. And there's various types of information to entice the user to explore. And so, but once the user has made the decision to do something, we reuse, in this case, pivots. If they go into music, now they're in pivots, right? And the pivots are optimized to show the UI is still in an interesting way because you're still in this entertainment mode. But nevertheless, the user has a very efficient, habitual way of interacting with the music content that they have on their device. And then also another transition could be into the player. And that, too, is a very focused, task-based behavior, but then also a UI that supports that particular goal. And you're not kind of like, once again, you know, kind of getting in their way to complete a goal once they've drilled in. So a couple kind of general guidance then we have about the never the twain shall meet. A couple things is never place a pivot inside a pano. So these two things would be a really bad idea, because what would happen is the user would start scrolling, and then they get stuck, and they'd get angry, and they'd blame all of us. Another thing is never place a pivot inside a pivot. So this is where if you have nested, basically, pivots, that would be a disaster, right? Because the user would have to be managing pivots above pivots. And believe me, we've tried it and it didn't work. And then never place a pivot or a pano to create a wizard flow. So there are certain things that you could imagine, like the user would do this and that, you know, to complete the, you know, put their password in one part of the pivot and then swipe over and then put settings in another and then swipe over, et cetera. Like, it doesn't work that way. Like, the user sees pivots, they see panos as distinct areas of data getting surfaced to them, not as kind of a flow of UI that they walk through. So if you need to create a wizard, that's something that you use more page flow, kind of next and back and cancel buttons in a traditional way. So that was a lot of content. So any questions about pivots and panos? Yeah.
Yeah, because you're saying that when you make that action from the panel, you're just making a conscious decision to go into the drilling into the habitual behavior. But, I mean, what if, like, we're running into this a lot of projects where we want to be encouraged exploration. So we actually are making we're feeling like the next step is not a panel. Like, we, you know, if you take the marketplace scenarios, it's like I drill into an artist, and all of a sudden there's nothing I actually want to do. I want to explore more about this artist. And so panel seems to be like a lot of interest.
Yeah. So the question is about how is it basically how strict the guidance is around how habitual that behavior is from one pano into a drilled kind of focused behavior. Yeah, so what's the cognitive tax, basically, of going from one pano to another? The most important thing, no matter what UI you're using, is that the user is confident that the information sent is high, right? I mean, just basic kind of UI stuff, right, where they feel like they are meeting the goal that they've set out in some way, whatever that goal is. So in the case of Marketplace, if their goal is to continue to explore certain types of applications, then the goal, if you transition from one pano to the other, is to ensure that no matter where the user lands, that one, they understand from whence they came, but then also they understand that they were successful, in what they hit, that they know where they are, and that they can use that space. There's probably a limit. We don't have data that says what the limit is to how many panos comes to the point where the user feels like that we're just kind of getting in their way, or we're making it difficult for them to get to the point where they actually intend to do something, you know? So I think the more that we can do to suggest to the user that you're still on your way to browsing, you know? So if the user hit a particular application, right, like an icon that implies that they get to go see the details of an application in Marketplace, we wouldn't want to take them to a pano, you know, that for that category. Instead, we should take them to the application. So it's definitely a balance of, like, how many panels you stack on top, because there's the graphics and the play and stuff that you're able to offer a lot of visual stimulation to the user, but you also will get a lot of benefit to just getting them onto that goal of of getting down to the content level that they care about. So really understanding those scenarios is kind of critical, especially when you figure out that top layer and how you're going to use the pano.
Yeah, I think there's a balance. I mean, when you surf ESPN.com, you go to a homepage that's about browse. Yes, you can cycle down into the NFL, but NFL is still a little bit of browse. You don't just dump into a whole bunch of NFL stories. There is that happy medium of, mm-hmm. of too much and too little. So.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
I think it is called a panorama panel.
Yeah, so the question, do you want to go? Oh, so this is
Windows
a panorama panel? Yeah. Windows, oh, yeah, Series 7. Yeah, so this is a panorama, this is, the whole thing is a panorama, and then this is a panorama panel, and this is a panel, panorama panel title.
Yes.
I think. Say that again. The pivot, I believe, is
just a pivot.
It's the pivot. It's just,
it's
yeah,
a pivot,
each one is
pivot.
A pivot. Using the pivot control with multiple pivots in it.
So my second question is, I know this is a bizarre edge case, but say you're in a pivot, you have a pivot control.
Yeah.
And your title for that particular pivot actually wraps off the side, so it's not obvious to the user that they're in a pivot control. I'm sure that's probably frowned upon, but you may end up in a situation where it has to be that long. Say, how would you handle it?
Right,
the question is, how do you handle long titles within Pivot?
So what if the title was Artists and Albums?
Yeah.
Right? Like, what if it was longer? Is there, does anyone know? There's
try
a design.
To change the string.
Yeah. We just do our best.
Try to get creative. It's not all documents. It's just all. You are going to run into cases where if you're doing albums or artists, again, we just try to be creative. But
this is especially the case in localized strings. It can be a problem.
I think you were first in the...
This may be an inappropriately timed question, not only today, but for you guys, but I feel compelled after your presentation to ask, so forgive me if it's not...
No, I'm scared.
Oh, it's lunchtime. Sorry.
Oh, sorry, we gotta go. So is the question whether or not we are looking at these on different screen sizes?
So some of us here are working in other form factors, but maybe want to utilize.
It's something we're just starting to get into. I mean, obviously, our main focus is to get 7 out the door.
Yeah.
We have thought of that along the way of what will this experience be like on other devices or, three screens or what that UI is looking like. So. It is something we work on. We're not ready to kind of reveal or show anything today, but we can keep you guys in the loop for that.
But the one thing to note is that all of these experiences have been totally optimized to the devices that we plan on having, 4/7. So everything is really thought through. Just to the nuances of where this cuts off on our screen sizes, like all of that was really planned out, not only with the design but also a lot of user testing went into making sure that all that stuff worked.
And I think I want to reiterate that Metro is not like the layout, it's more of a design language and certain principles. So again, it's the typography, so whether the typography is 54 point or 154 point, it's basically just those four or five principles that I think you sit them next to each other and it becomes one cohesive experience.
Mm-hmm.
I think, again, it, depending on the breadth of your app. So the question was, how do you deal with navigation? Some panoramas will have navigation, some panels will not.
And specifically using a list?
Yep.
Yeah.
So some applications, it's the quick drill down method. So some applications you will see probably a music panel, a video panel, and you know, it could have a more underneath each panel. This is just quick navigation that a person can swipe over to and drill in. And it shows you the depth. I mean, you'll see instances of that's how people will navigate to search, that sign in. I think people will use that in a creative way. It's just it's kind of a list view panel inside the panorama.
The intent also is to optimize to the primary scenarios, right? So we know, just to look at this one in particular, we know what the primary scenarios are for music, for example, in video. And often it's just to play my music. And so that play button is there just to start music, you know, and to drill into the other types of media content that you have. And then there was always this balance with any of the panoramas that we created to entice the user to do more while at the same time never getting in the way of the things that we know that they also wanted to do with these things. So that a lot of times those lists are solving that problem as well.
So it is actually quite high up in terms of hierarchy.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yeah, so the question is with some of the animation studies, you'll see content actually swipe through the window as kind of a reveal. You know, you guys get to choose which panel is displayed by default. You know, imagine a sign-in experience where the user has signed in, we've saved your credentials. Don't always land on the sign-in screen. You know, show the user some content, but you got to have that panel available to sign out or to get other content. So, I think lots more questions. Go ahead. I think it depends on the specifics of the content. Is there a second level of navigation for that? How many are there? And again, what's the core task? Mm-hmm. You've decided to go into music, so I'm going to slice up music for you versus I'm going to, you know, I've landed on my latest pictures, you know. I think it kind of depends on the scenario.
Yeah.
So it's definitely not wrong.
No. I think what you want to do is to try to get at the panorama level, you still want to get the user a view of the content that they otherwise would not get, you know, and as a holistic panorama. So there may be parts of the panorama that will drill into different views, but the panorama as a whole should be able to serve content, at least in a way that the user would not otherwise see.
One more, and then we're going to go to lunch, and then you can ask questions at lunch.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Correct.
As far as the images for the background of the panorama, is there any guidance for trying to keep the left and right edges consistent? Because I know when I play with it, when I go and the whole image wraps around, like when it moves background, it seems somewhat jarring.
There's a break.
The right and the left. Is there any need to keep that consistent on the end, or is that intentional?
Totally. So the question is the background, the Fulby background art, does it need to... Does it wrap or be abrupt or match? So we actually do both. So on the Games Hub, we actually do match it, so it is seamless. And we did, it's the old school, you know, background tile offset filter in Photoshop, versus the 16x9, you know, artist art, you know, it'll be abrupt. So it's totally up to you if you want to match that or not.
And are the panoramas, they're always exploratory, like they should never be used for options, they should never have any form of an input, it should always just be exploratory?
I'd say ideally, yes. So should panoramas be used for settings or options, input? The way to kind of, at least that I think about it, is the panorama was built with a specific user intent in mind, which was exploration and, you know, a very kind of beautiful presentation of content. And there are other controls on the device that are deeply user tested that are much better at solving those problems of input, of text input, of settings controls, et cetera. And so I would break those rules judiciously. Are panoramas a fixed size?
No.
No.
Again, it's you know, we optimize for four panels, but sometimes this, like in the pictures panel, it's an extra wide. So, you know, it totally depends on your layout.
Right, because, if you look at this, like, this is a scrolling list that's longer than this area right here, which is just the screen size, right? So there's... The size is varied not only across like across the panels, but also within a panorama, those panels are of different sizes.
So you could have one that's twice this length
wide? I guess technically you could.
Yeah. Okay, I lied. One more. So the question is the parallax baked into the control? So actually, the parallax in regards to the background image, it's the relationship between the width of the pano and the width of the image. So I think our recommendation is to, if you're uploading your background image, to make it about 1,000 pixels by 800 pixels. And so if your panorama was 1,400 pixels, then you're going to get that difference. You know, if you want it to move faster or slower, you just make your background slower. But you want to try to make your background image independent of the content, so you know, because the two are never going to match up. Mm-hmm. So let's have lunch. I just wanted to add that a couple of us in the back do have devices that we're more than willing to, you know, let you explore. I know that devices in the world are hard to come by, so they're there for showing if you want to experience it. So
thanks.